Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
You know, the leaves. What's on the up? Trees what's are up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and what's going on, everybody, as we wind down another month. We wind down another continuation of bad news is good news, the perverse market of Wall Street. And as we saw during the week, obviously holiday shortened week, but a big down, big up. You get the picture? We're really going nowhere. It's just a lot of movement. And the other thing is, you know, I say big, you know, in today's market, a 200-point move is not a big move, right? You know, I always like to just compare it down, you know, to, you know, a $20 stock move in 20 cents. It's not that big a deal, you know? So you wouldn't get excited if you're, you know, unless you're taking a shot, but, you know, if your $20 stock would go up or down 20 cents, you wouldn't go, oh my God, what a big move. You'd say, okay, great. And that's, you know, so the sensationalistic parts of journalism, and you know, when people have to put it out there and they feel compelled to create excitement, create markets, that's what you get. You get a lot of people talking a lot of stuff like, oh my God, it's, you know, I was on Fox on Wednesday and oh my God, another record in the NASDAQ and oh my God, here we go. And look, let's look at some facts. Let's talk turkey, even though it's not Thanksgiving, but let's talk turkey. Let's look at what's going on around the globe. You know, earnings, first quarter, sucked. Now, you'll hear many of the experts say, well, they were good because they were expected to be bad. So it's okay as long as you tell me that you're going to be bad and you don't do as bad as you said you were going to do, well, then it's okay. Now, you know, many companies are famous for this, and you know, you would think at some point that the consumer or the buyers of the stocks would finally figure out that, you know, stocks like Cisco, Apple, they are notorious for under reporting and over delivering. In other words, they give you their expectations knowing that they're low, knowing that their step over the bar is going to be easy. And of course, that always does, that then creates some buying, usually, some enthusiasm. And you get a move. Now, what's the purpose of that? Well, typically it brings more buyers into your stock. It makes them feel more comfortable that you're always beating numbers. And you can typically get some more support for your stock. But in today's, especially in today's world, and this is something that, you know, we don't talk about enough. Markets are so efficient, you know, much more efficient than they were. Why? Well, number one, they're open 24 hours a day, basically. We are now in a worldwide market. Yes, we have the FTSE in Europe, and we've got the CAC and the GAC and the Shenzhen and the Nikkei, and of course our market. But they are all actually very much more connected than ever before, because everything does tie to everything else. And because of the ongoing flow of information and the ability to trade and hedge and be involved in markets 24 hours a day, every day, you can change and do these things. So it does become a much bigger deal of news, because now the news is not as important, because a lot of the news plays out in long before. So we don't see a lot of the major things happen, you know, and even going back just a few years ago, the flow of information that is out there now and is so fast, you know, when you think about it, everybody is sitting there with a computer in their pocket. Everybody is getting the most updated between the tweeting and Facebook and every other medium, not to mention just the news itself. you know, if you remember, and it's not that long ago, you know, you wanted a stock quote, you know, you could only get like a delayed quote off of a Yahoo or, you know, of course, unless you were a professional that had, you know, a live data feed. But for most people, you'd look at Yahoo and you could get, you know, a delayed quote. Not that it mattered because we don't need anything faster. But the constant information flow that's out there now has changed. It's changed the dynamics of looking for or having expecting a surprise in the market. So if you've noticed, there's very few surprises. Now there are surprises. Obviously, companies may pre-announce or they may have bad news. Now that happens, and that obviously we can't always account for that. But even some of that can be somewhat accounted for, which is why, you know, for years we have said the Thursday jobless claims numbers don't mean anything. Because what did I really mean? We already know all that information. The data is already easily calculated. And, you know, you take now a lot of these sophisticated computer programs that companies have. I mean, they can kind of gauge what the numbers are going to be. It shouldn't be a major surprise. Now, you know, for example, on Wednesday, you know, Michael Kors had a major surprise. It was ugly. Major surprise is the downside. The markets had expected a move of about plus or minus 10%. Well, guess what? The stock moved 25%. Why? Well, because that was news that was not accounted for. Now, that's what we look for, and that's the things that, you know, make markets more active. But most of the time, it's hard to find a major surprise. So, you know, we shouldn't be shocked that the markets right now are just churning back and forth. Now, why are they churning? Well, they're churning because really direction is questionable. Fundamentalists would look at it and say, well, geez, we're getting some trouble. Of course, none of them do now. They all get on TV and say, bye, bye, bye. And of course, why? Because, well, they know that right now the markets are going higher. But remember, you heard this on the Bubba Show from Bubba. Analysts and prognosticators, upgrades and downgraders, almost always upgrade at the top and downgrade at the bottom. And if you don't believe it, just go back and look at some charts of some major companies that were upgraded when they were going to the moon and downgraded when they're going to the basement. And typically we went the opposite once that information came out. But my whole point is we are in a situation, we are in a market that right now has no decision on which way it wants to go. And I believe that over time here, we will see a top in the market, but I'm not predicting a top today, nor do I want anybody to sell your current portfolio. Again, and that's what we teach. You know, that's what part of the Bubba Report is about. That is what part of my one-on-one and my coaching programs are about. We teach never to panic. Remember the commercials? Never let them see you sweat. We teach you not to sweat. We teach you to figure it out and put yourself in a position of protection so that you don't have to worry about it. Wouldn't it be nice to go to bed every night and not have to worry about if something's going on in the market overnight that's going to break you, that's going to put you back in a bad position? Well, again, those are things that we work on all the time. And you know, you should reach out and go to thebubbashow.org. And the first thing you should do is you should get the Bubba Report, which is $99 a year. It has a minimum of 12 issues. It has my own proprietary indexes in which we built, you know, which are like our own ETFs, but not based on any nonsense that the ETF market likes to use, based on true movement. Okay. You've got the Badger who writes for it. You've got Keith Bliss from the New York Stock Exchange. You've got Scott Chalady from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, myself. You've got Mike Brown, financial analyst, as well as a financial planner. You've got Bonnie Pittenger on real estate, Steve Kalasian on trading. What better, what more information could you ask for to make your life better and easier to deal with? So I encourage you to go to the Bubba Show and get signed up for the Bubba Report for $99 a year. I think if you're not getting on, you're making a mistake. But anyways, this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop out here for a break and come back with our good friend Jane King, fresh back from Utah. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Right back. Love runs high in this time. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz and my friend Jane King, world traveler. I've been all over the place creating new business. Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report, as seen on the BubbaShow.org. Jane King, what's up and how was Utah?
Yeah, Utah, I'd never been there before. And it's an interesting stay. I mean, Salt Lake City is beautiful and actually has better restaurants than you might expect. A little sleepy. Of course, I'm used to New York, so everything seems sleepy anymore. But the national parks in southern Utah, like no place else in the world. Like Bryce Canyon, you feel like you're on another planet. These rocks were created there over like 500 million years. Just amazing. And so we got to see a part of the country we'd never seen before. And we did some hiking, some kind of challenging hiking. We went to the park one day. And we're a little scared. It was kind of steep, and we're like, "Oh, we better not do this." You know, we went back the next day, and it didn't quite seem so intimidating. We hiked all the way to the bottom of the canyon, and so I feel like it was a good life lesson for the kids to not give up the first time you try something if you're scared.
Absolutely, and you know, I know that you have some interest in what's going on, not only in Utah and all your other radios, but your TV spots and your TV stations, but. There's a lot of things going on in China as well right now, and so let's go from the west to the east. And what are you seeing in China, and what do you think about what's going on there?
Wow, what a night for China. Shanghai down 6.5%, so huge drop there. Of course, they've had a big run-up so far this year, so a bit of a correction, I guess, due, although this is an extremely large one. And my kids' college money is in Chinese stock, so I do watch the Chinese stock market more than maybe a lot of average Americans do. But, you know, I mean, I think they just, the catalyst really, the bank shares, looks like that the Chinese brokers have been tightening their margin rules, kind of just overall lending restrictions, and that's what drove those markets lower. So we'll see. This is a continuation of this as we head into next week, or if this is a one-time correction.
Well, do you see, I mean, listen, they're up over 100%, so it's not like, you know, something major. But let me ask you a question. You're invested heavily in China. You stated that clearly. Are you a true believer in China? And do you believe in the numbers and things that they report all the time?
No, I don't totally. But I don't believe in U.S. government numbers either all the time. So I guess, you know, although China probably fudges them a little bit more. I just see them as different than the U.S., but also growing. I've heard from people who've been over there that they just have a different work philosophy than Americans do. They don't ask, well, how much vacation time do I get as soon as, you know, they go into a job interview. They want to work. They're very enthusiastic about technology. They're enthusiastic about entrepreneurship. They work hard. And I think, you know, I've got U.S. stocks too. You know, I'm not totally negative on the United States, but I do think long term, and this is for my kids, that we're talking about when they're in college and beyond, that China will be a good investment over the decades.
And China, obviously, great spot, and certainly they do produce a lot of goods. And of course, you know, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I found it interesting when I was in China, you know, when they build a building or they build roads, you know, the last time I was there, now this was a while ago, but they still did everything basically by hand, right? So when you built a building, you didn't get a place to sleep until you had a roof over the building, because they didn't build, only the management gets living quarters and the workers sleep in the thing that they're building, and until they get a roof on it, they have no roof over their head. What do you think about that?
Well, I think China has a lot to do, and pollution as well. That's like my biggest worry about China is just how bad the air is and how bad the water is. And I remember, of course, I follow the agricultural markets a lot as well, and reading about there was a shortage of rice there a few years back when we were seeing a lot of commodity shortages, and they were taking plastic pieces and putting them in rice bags as fake rice. So, obviously, they have a long way to go in terms of regulation and respect for their people, human rights, the environment. But I think they'll get there. I think there's a desire there to get there. And I think, you know, in some ways, it's a fascinating culture as well. My kids are learning the language and how the language works. It's all, you know, the characters are kind of based on nature, and the way they count is very logical, much more than we do. So it's an interesting culture, although I do think they have a long way to go in terms of the human rights and environment.
What do you think? Now, I mean, let's talk about that for a minute. Do you think that the powers that be in China, you know, I mean, the oligarchs, the big cash, the ones who can really control the country, do you think they really want equal everybody? Do you think they want to see a middle class grow there? Or do you think they like being in total control and really capitalizing on their own money?
Well, I think what they want to see is the Communist Party remain in control, or at least their party, although they have some capitalistic tendencies, you know, probably maybe even more pure than what we have here. But I do think they want to see a middle class. I just think their main thing is to remain in power, and perhaps a middle class that isn't there and thriving and growing would be more of a threat to their leadership than what would be they would just leave it alone.
You know, because when you look at China and you see what goes on, and of course they have like everybody else, they have their own rules, and you know, for forever they've had a peg on their currency, and you know, they've widened the peg, but they still pretty much manipulate and control their own currency. And of course you see that they allowed, you know, copper as a vehicle that you could borrow against, and of course they had to manipulate the price of copper to make sure that the lending values were good, because obviously they don't have the same over-regulation that we have here, but they obviously every bank and every financial institution has some sort of regulation. And those are things that kind of bother me about China. You know, again, obviously tremendous growth and certainly tremendous possibilities for them. But do you see it? What would be, if you were looking, you know, and you're young and, you know, you're educated and you've been around, in your mind, we've watched a lot in China over the years. What would be your timeline to see that China would become, you know, let's say what the U.S. was 80 years ago?
Where were we? 2015? I mean, my guess would be about 2030.
Okay.
We're going to see China, if not the largest economy in the world, very close to it. You know, you think about the U.S. 80 years ago, I mean, what have we gone through? I mean, the Great Depression, I mean, horrible, 25% unemployment, and I mean, just gut-wrenching banking, you know, banks failing, and just a terrible time for people. But we came through it. Of course, we had a world war as well over that time period. So it's not going to be, you know, straight up, but I do think China is emerging as the world power.
Now, do you think that China will eventually be the world currency?
I don't know about that.
Okay, well, I mean, you know, because...
I don't know about that. Boy, that's a good question. Now, I think the U.S. dollar is going to be it for a while. Now, the U.S. dollar is, of course, very valuable now, but it is losing some of its luster. I mean, we've seen Russia try to come up with an alternative currency, or at least have, you know, oil and other natural resources priced and other things. So there's going to be some big powers emerge that are going to want to see more balanced currencies. It won't be the U.S. dollar totally dominant like it has been, but I think the U.S. still will be the main currency in the world for my lifetime.
All right, and I agree with that, and, you know, some point, but I guess it doesn't really matter at the end. So let's come back as we come towards the end here, but let's come back from, we went to Utah, we went to China, now let's go to Indiana, because I know you obviously talk to your family all the time, and of course, there's a lot of things going on in the grain space here, and they're under pressure again. And are you hearing anything going on that we should know about?
Well, I haven't talked to any of my family this week, so but I do know that the planning is looking pretty good. It was a little wet there, but certainly nothing majorly threatening. And looks like, I mean, the USDA is saying we may have another big crop this year, which is going to be perhaps a bin buster, certainly won't be good for prices. Quite a difference in what we saw back in, 2012 with the record highs. So it's really been, that's the nature of commodity markets, especially the grain market, when you're so dependent on weather. Of course, you still got July and August to go through, and those are the key months for corn and soybeans.
I mean, right, and that, you know, we talk about it all the time, but, you know, we're only at if you compare it to a sporting event, this is a first quarter score, right? They're getting it in the ground, it's planted. However, there's a lot of things that can happen on the way to the silo, right? I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that can happen that can change the dynamics of the markets and push them up. But of course, you told us, and I think that was one of the wisest things I've ever heard is, you know, yeah, I don't get as much, but if I can produce more, I'm still getting a lot of cash flow, and maybe I'm not going to make as much, but at least I'm making something.
Yeah, I mean, any farmer will tell you they'd rather have a crop than high prices and no crop to sell. So, but yeah, of course, July, key month for corn. If it starts getting dry here, and I mean, New York, I mean, of course, we're not growing corn in New York, but it's been the driest May for several years. So, you know, if we start seeing that happening in the Midwest, the grain markets are going to respond very quickly, and especially in July when the corn's pollinating. I mean, that's a key time. Hot and dry during pollination is going to destroy the crop. So we still got to get through the rest of summer before we start calling this a bin buster.
Jane King, The Ka-Ching Report, Lila Max Media, you are always awesome and always bring a tremendous amount. We did some world travels today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Jane King, The Ka-Ching Report, Lila Max Media. We'll be back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and as has become a tradition, one of my regulars, one of my guys who knows a lot, my friend Mike McClone from ETFSecurities.com, probably one of the best ETF spaces you could ever imagine with great items. So, Mike McClone, welcome aboard. I hope you had a good holiday week. What's going on, man?
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me back. I did. How about yourself?
It was all good. You know, it's always nice to, you know, especially... I really like the holidays where you really get to celebrate something, you know. I mean, you know, what's better than to celebrate our guys that gave us the great country that we live in? You know, I bitch about a lot of things and I complain about, you know, what's going on. But at the end of the day, you know, thanks to the veterans and, the, you know, the people that went to war and fought for us, we've got this great country in which it'll give us the right to bitch about it.
So true. I have a father who's a U.S. Marine and a son who's a U.S. Marine. And I still am a wannabe. I still feel like I need to do some more to serve my country. And at least this last weekend was a good weekend to remember all those who really have and who have died for our country.
Yeah, no, it's great. So, Mike, you know, as we come up here towards the, you know, the end of another month and, you know, really another month of not a lot of stuff going on, right? The markets themselves are really just kind of trapped back and forth with, I don't know if they have any real direction in mind. We still got, you know, interference or, you know, the manipulation of the central banks and the Fed. So, you know, give us a little thought of what you're thinking about the last month and maybe give us a little forecast. What do you think going forward?
For the month of May, as we're getting towards the end of it, is really a non-event month. One thing that's really notable to me is you're still getting this, I would say, impressive resilience in the precious metals. Obviously, that's somewhat of our focus. Now, the equity market's doing fine. S&P 500 is up 2%. New highs, NASDAQ all-time new highs. Still the classic wall of worry. You look at what happened. That's generally been driven by Fed funds. I mean, you know, and Fed rate expectations. Every time they take out potential rate hike expectations of market rally. So it's been an odd market in terms of the equity market. It's been one of those bad news is good news. And overall, the news has been somewhat neutral, if not somewhat worse than expected, you know, like the economic surprise data. Data is still not coming on as good as most people would expect. Notably, if you consider the fact that we've had this plunge in energy prices and consumers should be doing much better. But there's a quote that came out this morning that I thought was quite impressive from Fed Governor Williams of the San Francisco Bank, and they're San Francisco Fed, and there's still all the Fed governors are still saying the same thing, and that is we're going to hike rates and we expect the economy to improve, which I think is great. I think what they're doing is doing the prudent thing that Fed governors should do, and that is they're trying to talk up the economy. They're trying, you know, that's their expectations. But one thing that was kind of notable, I thought, he said that we look for these forecasts. We could look for rates to go back to normal rates around 3.5 to 4% in the next few years, 15, 16, and 17. So that would imply that that's the Fed funds rate. The bond yield right now is 2.2% or so. That would imply a bond yield of probably about 5 to 6%, which would be quite significant, and that would imply inflation around 3 to 4% CPI, which to me is complete dream. And there's one thing I wanted to mention why I thought so. I've done a little bit of analysis lately on total energy production in this country. It's nowhere near what you'd expect for an inflationary growing economy.
Well, and of course, that would be something that, you know, we constantly look at, right? I mean, there's a whole bunch of things going on, but, you know, I hear the inflation. I hear all these things of what the Fed is looking for, and they keep saying we're looking for data. And of course, we had data back a couple of years ago that probably would have supported a rate increase. But of course, if we all go back and remember the taper tantrum, right, which is, I think it's like a 3-year anniversary now, right, from the taper tantrum, or 2 years, whatever it was. You know, who knows? I get so old, I can't remember what happened yesterday, but it was a while ago. But so what, when you look and you go, okay, I mean, because you're an analyst and you are a student of the markets and you study and you understand what's going on and you write a lot of reports for them, where is it, how is it going to play out the way you see it? And are we going to get what we need to actually see some real growth in this country?
Unlikely. I think that's the dream. I think what the Fed is doing that right now is they're trying to be ahead of the curve. They're trying to predict what's going to happen and warn us that there's going to be rate hikes. But that's a prudent thing to do. I think that's the dream. It would be wonderful if it happens, but it's very unlikely. Just look at the rest of the world, and let's look what the markets are telling us. If you look at the price of crude oil has collapsed, the bond yields have collapsed. Yes, some of these indicators, the labor indicators, look terrific, but what I did is I just got on the U.S. Energy Information Agency website, and I grabbed some of their energy consumption data for the last, 60 years. And one thing I found was, okay, you can look at all this data in terms of unemployment, but it doesn't really point out the fact that most people are working two jobs, and they might not be claiming unemployment, but they're not getting health insurance and working twice as hard as they ever have. But you look at retail sales, they haven't picked up. So I looked at energy consumption, and since World War II, there's never been a 10-year period we haven't increased our energy consumption. Let's look at 2004, the last time the Fed tightened. From the 10 years before that, energy consumption in this country increased by 10%. And that's as measured by BTU. So it's not dollar amount. It's by British thermal units. The last, this 2015, it's expected that energy consumption compared to 2005, 10 years ago, should decline 2%. Decline. So not only is that a sign of the economy's not blasting off, but it's also a sign of technology is improving, demographic changes, people are getting older, but it's definitely not a sign of an economy that's expanding enough that the Fed should have to worry about tightening. And that's my point, is still the same case I've made all year, that this whole rhetoric from the Fed is wonderful, I think it's great, but it's a dream. And so to me, looking forward, what's going to happen is it's more likely that they're going to continue to take the Fed tightening out, which is actually good for the equity market in the short term. We'll see how long that lasts. And we probably are not going to get the inflation and the pickup we want in the economy. So it's very unlikely the Fed should tighten, even though it's priced in. So me going forward, that's what people are going to see. And I think I would be delighted to be wrong. And one of the first places to keep looking for an indicator is the U.S. bond market. If the U.S. bond market starts going up in yield, that might be a good indication that inflation is picking up. And by the way, it's been trending down for years. It's been trending down since last year. It's essentially a little bit lower this year. And to me, that's one of the first places I keep looking to see if I'll be wrong. And that is, hopefully bond yields can go up above 3%. That's a 10-year note, but still they're not. They're 2.2. They keep going lower. In fact, they're much lower than the rest of the world. And that's an indication that they're just not getting the kind of growth and demand that we should desire for the Fed to be tightening.
Well, Mike McClellan, you're never wrong, okay? You may not.
I'm always wrong. I'm often wrong. But
you're never wrong on your analysis. I mean, I give you credit. I mean, you work this stuff very hard, and you keep on top of it. So, but let's talk for a minute. We've got, next week, a week from today, we've got the jobs coming out. And you mentioned something when you're talking about jobs, and you said we're creating, the numbers look good. But let me ask you this. I mean, I look at the job numbers, and you said it also during your commentary that, people are working more jobs or making less money. So are the jobs numbers really good? And I contend that they're not. I don't care that it's 225,000. I don't care what the number is. The actual earning power of people is dramatically reduced over the last 10 or 15 years. And I think that becomes a bigger problem. What do you think?
Agreed. I mean, if you look at total household income in this country, it depends on what measure you use. It's something I'd like to look at, and there's always different measures where they benchmark and everything, but it's basically between $52,000 and $54,000. That's household income. That's for each household, and oftentimes it might mean two or three jobs and a couple wage earners. But that really hasn't changed in almost a decade. It hasn't gone up. That's got to change for the Fed to even consider tightening. There was this report I saw yesterday in the news. It headlines that Americans wanting more work at the same wage show job market is still slacking. And this is something, this is a headline that came out yesterday, and it's a report that Janet Yellen looks at, and it says that most people in this country still would work more hours at the same wage, which means that it's not only the fight for, you know, increasing minimum wage, it's just people want to make more money. They need to make more money just to make ends meet. And I think one of the key barometers lately has been this. We basically had a tax reduction, in one way to look at it, a boost with this massive decline in energy costs. I mean, the price of unleaded gas from there went near, you know, near above $3.50, almost $4, to below, in some cases, $2. I remember I was driving through Ohio, I saw it for $2. And that should boost consumer spending, retail sales, and the problem is, that's why I've really been looking at retail sales very closely, and they've actually been declining, which shows me that Americans took that opportunity as a chance to save and be frugal when they should be spending. And the fact that they're not makes me can be very concerned, and I'm kind of surprised the Fed hasn't, they've said a few things about it, but I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to talk up the economy, trying to warn us about this tightening, which to me is a dream. It's probably not going to happen.
Well, they're still manipulating the market, and they will not raise. That's my opinion. But so you made some very interesting points, and when we come back from the break, I'm gonna get into it. But this is what I want you to think about when we get ready to go to break here. Okay, you mentioned that everybody mentioned the tax cut of cheaper energy, and the cheaper gas prices were for such a short time that A, people don't have the money anyways. Whatever they're getting, they don't have. There is no more extra income. It's income to pay what you have to pay for, because I don't see anybody of the people that we're talking about that have extra. So when they saved a little bit on gas, it was going right to pay the rent, the car payment, the whatever it was, school, kids' education, clothing, food, all those things. Because we talked that inflation is not here, but of course, if you go to the grocery store, you're paying a lot more for goods than you paid years ago, and you're making less money. So my question to you will be, is where am I missing the boat? Because I bought gas today. I paid $3.30 a gallon. I had such a short period of time in which gas was cheaper, and yet crude oil is still half or so of what it was when I was paying four. So we're going to step out here for a break, and Mike's going to give us that answer because he is one of the top research analysts in the business, which is what makes his products at ETF Securities so good, because they understand it and they do things to make it best for the consumer, not best for themselves. And I think that was where you really separate yourselves out. Mike McClone from ETFSecurities.com. Check him out. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break with more from Mike McClone. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Mike McClone from ETFSecurities.com, a new sponsor of the Bubba Show. But really, in all factual, their ETF series is better than anything I've ever seen because of the way that they're calculating. They'll take care of it. We'll talk more about that later. So, Mike, I go back to the question we went to before the break, and I go, okay, I hear all your points, and I hear everybody that's telling me, but my own personal experience is that's not the case. I mean, I don't see it. I didn't see any extra money coming into my pocket. Yeah, gas was a little cheaper, but I got $105,000 a year I got to pay for college education. So I'm not raking in the cash because of savings, and I'm certainly not spending any discretionary money. Tell me what's going on.
That certainly seems to be the case with the average American, and that's what I've been really surprised by. And it's one thing as a research analyst, it's okay, it's wonderful to get things right, but it's most important to really figure out what the implications are when you're wrong. So to me, that's what's happening now. Most of us, all of us research analysts, fully expected some form of pickup in consumer spending, retail sales, and the economy from this decline in energy prices. Now, yes, it hasn't been that long term, it's hurt the energy sector, but from retail, at least from consumers. And that is the problem that I'm seeing right now, is it's not panning out the way it should, meaning retail sales have been declining when they should be picking up. That's one of the issues. And let me give you an example. Like beginning of last year, almost all research analysts expected bond yields to go up and commodities to go up. Now, I have to admit, I never expected bond yields to go up, but I did expect commodity prices to go up, and I was dead wrong. And I have to think, what does that mean? So to me, what that means is what's happening globally and in this economy is what the Fed is telling us is much different than what's really happening in the real world. And that is that the economy, average consumer, continues to retrench. The economy is not picking up anywhere near it has in the past, yet we have a bunch of economists at the Fed are continuing to look at the past and trying to relate that to the future. And I don't like to say it so much, but it has changed this time. And what I mean is, shorter term, we look for the data. The data should be improving. It should be getting this little bonus from energy, and it's actually getting worse. So we keep thinking, oh, and maybe it's just the weather. But I look at one thing I've been looking at lately is global auto sales. And global auto sales in the first quarter of this year were up the least amount in about since the crisis. So that to me is a bit of a problem. It's not just U.S., it's global. And that's why a lot of the rest of the world, you see central banks cutting rates. And they're not really cutting rates because they want to. They're doing it because they have to. And I think they're starting to worry about this global lack of demand pull, which is not the Fed is can't, you know, it's such a dichotomy of them being the only economy, of them being the only central bank in the world looking to tighten. And I don't think that's going to last much longer.
Well, and again, I go back to my original statement, which I know you and I don't agree on, but I'm going to say it, and then I'm not going to let you respond. I say that I don't think the Fed's done a very good job. That goes back to my original, that I don't think they have any idea what the hell's going on. I don't think they know what real life is. I don't think they know what the real world is. And I think they have no interest in the middle class in this country, because it's evident that they are not doing anything to really help the overall middle class. But, so you mentioned something earlier. And, you know, I want to look at it a little bit. We talked about precious metals, and you made, you know, reference to, you know, silver has been one of the better performers, and gold looks good. So what's your take now in the precious metal space? I mean, gold really seems to be stuck pretty much range bound over here for the last period of time. And, you know, there's a number of reasons why. What's your look ahead into gold and silver?
I'm bullish, and here's why. Mainly because when markets don't do what they're supposed to, then they oftentimes do the opposite. And the environment for precious metals this year, the last 6 months, has been really bad. To give you an example, the dollar VIX has been weaker. That's usually bad for precious metals. The stock market's been up. Precious metals are, you know, they basically are designed to, they're basically a good hedge against most other assets like the stock market. The dollar index in the last 6 months is up 10%. And there's been massive outflows in ETF holdings. Now, if you had told me all this data 6 months ago, I'd said, oh, the precious metals would be down. But if you look at this last 6 months, and even June, silver's up 8% and gold's up 2%. And to me, that's telling me that there's divergent strength in that market. Why? I don't know. But then I look over at the rest of the world. In terms of the euro, gold's up 16%. In terms of the yen, it's up 6%. So it's a global phenomenon. Gold and silver are completely global, not solely the commodities or currencies. And so the markets are not doing, they're not going down in a real bad environment. So when I look at that, is that's divergent strength. That's a sign of a foundation I'm supposed to be adding to my allocation. Now, we have to diversify. At some points, you're supposed to overweight, and some points, you're supposed to underweight. Now, overweighting gold and silver back in the beginning of 2000 was a tremendous thing to do. Underweighting in 2011-12 was the right thing to do. And I think now the market's telling us we're supposed to probably start reallocating and bringing back to a little bit more of a higher weight in the precious metals, most notably because they're not going down. They're holding good support in an environment that's really been somewhat bad. So to me, that's, they're kind of looking forward to potentially, a better environment. So the key quote for me is, if they're not going to go down in an environment like this, what's it going to take?
And I agree 100%. That's always one of the things I look at when I'm doing analyzation on TV is, you know, they talk to me about different markets, and I go, look, they're not going down. They should be, and they're not. So now, you at ETFsecurities.com have some great products. And, you know, I keep thinking about that. And every, you know, I lay awake at night thinking about how good your products are in respect to the way it accounts for everything. And so when you look at the ETFs that you have, basing on the precious metals, I know you're a big fan of Glitter, which I am as well, which takes the basket of precious metals, correct?
Yeah, and that's part of the reason I'm a big fan of it. It's the most defensible investment in precious metals there is. If you have to pick one, you might have an issue if you're wrong. But if you buy a basket, it's just like buying an index of stocks, you know, a stock fund. It's much more defensible to have longer term. Yes, sure, you might have a problem if palladium doesn't go up, but it's a smaller portion. But overall, you're getting that more diversified exposure to precious metals. And to me, in the long term, most people understand that. What we're seeing oftentimes is the more institutional investors are saying, yeah, you know, gold can have its nuances and its issues, but if you buy that index, it really makes it much easier for us to explain to our, you know, our board of directors and our end user investors.
No, and I agree. And so what I'm asking you here now, and what I love about your products, and this is, you know, something that people don't understand about commodities. You know, commodities are different than every other tradable product because they have different formations. They have what they call contango, and they have backwardation, and they have all kinds of adjustments that get to be made. And your stuff, the ETF securities that comes up, is one thing that has said, you know what, we have to take all that stuff in account so that we can actually price these properly so that they do stay in a formation based on what the actual physical metals are doing. So tell us, I know you've told us before, but please explain this again.
Yeah, and I take seize the opportunity. I gave a presentation to a group of investors last Friday, and I showed a slide that shows the difference in commodity returns. So first, the simplistic return is bottom line. No one can invest in the physical commodity and get the spot return. The only commodities or currencies you can do that are precious metals because it costs nothing to store them. So all our ETFs are physically backed precious metals, meaning we don't use the futures market to get exposure to, let's say, gold, silver, platinum, palladium. You physically, when you buy an ETF we offer, they physically take that metal and put it in the vault for you, and it's allocated and everything, so you get that spot price less the expense ratio. So let me give you an example. If you want to buy crude oil, you can't invest in crude oil. You have to buy an ETF that tracks the futures market or through something through swaps that uses derivatives. So let's look at the spot price of crude oil since the end of 2008. It's up about 60%. But the number one ETF that tracks the spot price of crude oil is down 30%. And the reason for that is it has to use futures. It has to roll. And you mentioned contango. We don't have to get into the nuances of futures, but that's basically, it has to roll that future so it doesn't expire. And it's just complicated. The more complicated it is, you know, there's always going to be something to go wrong. That's what I like to say, and that's what I often like to point out. Glitter is a great exposure to overall commodity market. You have, in case there's a debasement of currency, but there's no derivative between your return and that return on the actual spot price. So that's, to me, the key thing. If you look at the price of gold since 2008, it's up about 40%, and the number one ETF that tracks gold is up about 38%, just a little bit less, only because there's a bit of an expense.
And that is why we love ETFsecurities.com here on The Bubba Show, and that's why we're proud to be able to post their report into our guest information, because, again, when you go to The Bubba Show, you get information because, you know, Mike, I know, believes in it. Mike and I are old veterans of the Chicago Board of Trade, and we believe that you have information that you can interpret, and then you can make the trade based on what you see. But, again, we try to give you the best information. Mike McClone, ETFsecurities.com, always great to have you on. You bring a lot of great information. We really appreciate having you on.
Thanks for having me.
This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And again, remember to check out ETFsecurities.com. I'm telling you, you're getting the straight scoop. These are built by traders. This is something that really gives you the fair shake at what's going on when you look at these products. So go to ETFsecurities.com and check out my friend Mike McClone. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for today, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.